first case for argument this morning is 22-1598, Alexum v. Simon Property Group. Mr. Richardson.
Good morning, and may it please the court. The District Court for the Eastern District of Texas erred when it failed to perform a derivative claim construction for the phrase, for use in the card system, which is a phrase found within the party's stipulated construction of the claim term unmodified point-of-sale device. During the summary judgment proceedings below, the parties took opposing views about the meaning of the derivative phrase. The District Court should have performed an examination of the intrinsic evidence as is required by long-standing Federal Circuit precedent. It did not do so.
Well, can you be precise in terms of what this derivative claim construction would have, the construction deals with for use in the card system?
Your Honor, thank you. The phrase for use in the card system means using a standard POS device, the standard POS device functionality to perform the claimed functions. And that is directly related to the meaning of the term unmodified. So we know from examining the intrinsic evidence relative to the term unmodified that the term or phrase for use in the card system must relate to the unmodified definition that's in the record, the intrinsic record.
I'm not sure I frankly really understand the distinction. So what are the two alternatives? Maybe that will help me understand.
Thank you. The two alternatives are one that's presented by the 608 patent itself, which was a system that was intended to operate over the banking system using a BIN or a bank identification number. The other alternative was to use software, custom software, which is described in the remarks to the patent office, to use custom software to perform transactions from that device, the POS device, but off the banking network. So those were the two choices. An unmodified device, which treated the card much like a credit card, that used a BIN.
Okay, but we're here on summary judgment of non-infringement. And I thought the issue here, although I've got a lot of cases this week, so maybe I'm confusing this with something else, but I thought the issue here was whether or not you had put it on sufficient proof, right?
So, Your Honor, there's two questions here, if I may. One, the first is claim construction, and that is that there was an improper claim construction that was applied below. The second question, I think that you may be referring to, has to do with the issue of the impact of the IDT decision that the court reached some number of years ago and whether under that standard we had presented sufficient evidence. And I can address both of those issues.
And does the answer to that question differ based, in your view, based on which claim, whether we adopt your derivative claim construction or not?
I think it does substantially for a number of reasons, and that is that the IDT court did not perform any claim construction, let alone a derivative construction. So to understand the application of IDT, one first needs to understand...
Okay, I think this is... Can you just go back? So on the claim construction...
Yes.
You want some smaller set of modifications to than the other side wants. They want to say kind of there, I'm going to overstate this, any modification of the software or hardware for working on the system takes it out of the claim. You want to say, no, it has to be a very particular kind of modification.
Yes, Your Honor.
How do you define your subset of changes that would remove something from the claim language?
Your Honor, thank you for the question, and that's
it's
answered.
It's the same question. I think it was.
And I appreciate both questions. The question, the answer is found in six sentences of APPX 3469 to 3470, and in that this, and I'll give you a moment if you would to find that. These are the remarks accompanying.
Can you tell us the page numbers again?
Yes, APPX 3469 to 3470.
What volume is that?
This is the prosecution history?
It is.
That's okay, I got it.
Do you have it?
Wait, which volume is it?
I think it's in volume 3.
Thank you.
there's a lot of yellow on these pages.
I was surprised to see the yellow as well, Your Honor.
Well, you can't read us stuff that's in yellow unless you both have agreed that this isn't protected.
This is not protected information.
The yellow is from the district court's requirements that you highlight certain things to put in for with respect to the judgment.
Okay. That's a little inconvenient, given that the yellow means something much different.
Much different here. Yes, Your Honor. If I could draw your attention, maybe a little bit out of order, to 3470. This is where the definition actually takes place. The six sentences I was referring to begins on the page preceding, but the definition is at the top of 3470, which reads, "This additional programming is required so that the point of sale device can reach network devices outside the banking network." So these were the two, and you can see, again, at the bottom of that paragraph, there's an emphasis, again, that all of the prior art references were directed to solutions outside or independent of the banking network. So those were the two choices: to use an existing standard POS device, which is required by the specification, required to use a BIN, and therefore access the banking network, or use custom software, a modification, that would allow you to perform transactions on these multifunction cards outside the banking network. Those were the two choices. And we know that this is true from the
So you've invented a multifunction card that doesn't require extra programming at all these terminals. Is that your view?
That is in part the view, because we're not talking about any programming again. The term
or hardware. Yeah, but
I'm sorry.
I'm struggling with this a little too about what it means for use in the card system. But so I take it, first of all, you have a multifunction card, and the prior art to use those multifunction cards, or at least one of the things you referenced, required specific programming to adapt the POS terminals to work with it. Is that right?
Well, the end of that sentence is to reach a processor outside the banking network, because the two choices then were do the prior art, which was outside the banking network, and use software or hardware. They could use, for example, the Stimson closed system, but you use software or hardware to direct these transactions outside the banking network. Or you use the 608 patented system, which operated on the system, on the banking system, by using a BIN. And that was mandated by column 4 that required the use of a BIN on the POS devices of the 608 patent.
I'm still trying to pin down exactly what you're arguing. Is your argument then that the point of this invention is to take a multifunction card and use the bins so that it can just be plugged into any terminal?
Yes.
And without any kind of special hardware for the terminal or special software for the terminal?
Exactly. Wouldn't require some sort of special scanning device, wouldn't require some sort of single function dedicated hardware, which is what the Stimson device was at column 2 of the patent. You're exactly right. Yes.
Okay, I get that. Where, because you've been relying on this stipulated construction for a long time, right?
Yes.
Where was the first time you ever specifically raised this notion of what it means to be unmodified is not the terminals are unmodified from July 1997, but there's no specialized programming required to adapt it, hardware or programming to adapt it to this multifunction card.
With respect to this case, or
no, ever? I mean, because this construction has come up over and over again, and there's been understandings, I think, about how it's to be applied, particularly in our IDT case. Your construction doesn't necessarily seem wrong to me, but I don't know that you've made it specific enough before.
I thank you, Your Honor. The answer to your question is the Green Dot, Alexander versus Green Dot case was the first time that I personally was aware of and made these arguments. That resolved in a settlement, and the issues were not
But we've got other. We've got DataStream. We've got IDT. We've got GAP.
Sure.
I think so. Is Judge Hughes correct that in all of those other cases, the stipulated claim construction is not the derivative claim construction you're arguing.
The derivative claim construction was not reached previously. That is true. But
well, again, it's not a question of not reached. It wasn't presented by you or offered up by you.
By Alexander.
In terms of modifying what you had stipulated to as the correct
claim. Your Honor, I think I can say that you are correct, that I am not aware of the litigation of that phrase for use in the card system previously. I would say, and I think this is important, that during claim construction in this case, we did notify Simon and Blackhawk that was our view. And I would cite to Mr. Zatkovich's report that was provided for claim construction, particularly paragraph 52, where and the pages that precede that. And if you're interested in learning about our disclosures and arguments in this case that impact this claim construction, that's where I would initially point your honors to, that this was something that has been known very early, was our view of the phrase.
If this was true, why didn't you make this argument in IDT? I mean, wouldn't it seems like you were making a very similar argument there, maybe not in these specific words, but at least as I understand it now, maybe it's too simplistic, is, you know, you're just saying these cards can be used in any kind of point of sale terminal that uses regular banking stuff. And the fact that, and this was the way I was thinking about it earlier, maybe you can tell me if this is right or not. This doesn't matter whether we've gone from card readers that you use to swipe to card readers that you insert to card readers that you use a chip for and tap now. Is that your view?
That's exactly right. That's exactly right.
But that doesn't seem to be the claim construction that's at least implicit in the IDT case, because your argument there seemed also to be that, you know, it's unmodified because you can just use a Visa card, which we rejected.
Yes, but I'd like to unpack that a little bit, if I may. The IDT court, the problem below, certainly, and with our opposition's argument, is that they're conflating the factual recitals of that case with the holding of the case. And I'd like to directly address the point you made about the standard card.
I understand that point, that we didn't decide that specifically as a claim construction issue. But it seems that there's at least an inference that that was what was going on. And your arguments to avoid summary judgment were that because this was a Visa card, it would work with any point of sale terminal, that was good enough.
In IDT?
Yeah.
That was after trial. And the citations there are to the trial record. And the trial record showed only that the expert...
Let me just ask you, if that was your argument there and it was rejected, then... Isn't that your argument here today, basically?
No.
That because they're Visa cards? I know you have experts that say additional stuff, but the gist of it is, because it sounds like it's the gist of your invention, is these are multifunction cards that will work with any standard point-of-sale terminal.
Thank you for the question, and this is a critical point.
You know you can stop thanking us for our questions.
Oh, I'm sorry. But I'm grateful to have this question because it is something that I've been wanting to speak about. Fundamentally, it is not enough to just have a credit card device.
Okay, well, then
you
tell
need
us
to
what
show
else.
It's unmodified, which means you need to show that it is not using custom software to direct that
well,
card traffic off of the device.
Let me just say, you need to show who's got the burden here. It's your burden.
We do, absolutely.
Yeah, so we need to show.
Yes, we need to show that the card is being processed via the BIN and banking network and not via the custom software that is not allowed by virtue of the construction the definition provided by the applicant. That's what the difference is. IDT says it was not enough to just show that they could process standard transactions, and we agree. Our burden is to show not just that they were capable of processing these transactions, but that the cards at issue were actually processed using that mechanism, the BIN through the banking network, as opposed to the custom software that allowed you to process, for example, the Stimson card outside the banking network. That was our obligation, and that's what we've done.
Okay. We're way beyond the time. We'll restore some rebuttal time. Let's hear from the other side.
I'm apologizing. Thank you.
Two people are arguing splitting time? And can you tell me what you're going to argue versus what the other side is going to argue?
Sure, I'm up for 13 minutes, and basically most of the issues that apply to my client, Blackhawk Network, and then there's a couple of issues that apply to Stein.
And did we really need to have two full red briefs in this case?
The answer is yes, Your Honor. We had, below, we each filed separate summary judgment motions because there are different products at issue. There are some overlapping products, and then there are some different products.
But there are not different products on appeal.
No, there are different products on appeal as well.
Oh.
May it please the court. All the asserted claims of the 608 patent require an unmodified existing standard point of sale device. In order to get the 608 patent issued, Alexam needed to distinguish the anticipatory prior art reference Stimson. Alexam told this examiner that, quote, Stimson teaches the use of customized software requiring modification of existing point of sale devices. That for the applicant's invention, custom software is not necessary, and that, quote, existing point-of-sale devices can be utilized without modification, and that the invention is a, quote, great benefit over the systems of the prior art since no additional programming is required in the device.
So what is your response to the prosecution history that your friend directed us to?
It's clear and unmistakable that in order to get around Stimson, the appellant here had to basically say that unmodified was something that was now in the invention. And in fact, even with these arguments, the examiner would not allow the claims without Alexam agreeing to add the word unmodified to every single independent claim via an examiner's amendment to overcome Stimson. So it was added to every claim. It wasn't there before, but in order to get around Stimson, which was anticipatory, it was added.
We still have to determine unmodified as with respect to what, don't we? Is your view that any kind of modification, like what I said earlier, going from a swipe system to an insert system to a chip system, even if everything else and whatever software is needed to do that, even if everything else with regard to their invention stays the same, does that bring it out?
I would go with what this court said in IDT, which was, quote, no modifications were actually made to the terminal software in order to allow them to activate the cards. That's the constrictor. If you wanted to paint the terminal a different color, that's okay.
I get it, but it sounds like, the stipulated language and the prosecution history sounds like they're not talking about we're going to freeze in time a POS system with every single bit of hardware and software. What they're saying is, these prior multifunction card systems required special programming. Ours doesn't. And so you're never going to need to modify a POS terminal to use these cards. Modify it specifically. So to me, that sounds like individualized or specialized modification, not just the normal technological updates that happen over time that don't relate to this card system.
That's correct. That's correct. It'd have to be limited. I mean, our view is that it's going to be limited to for use in the card system, which in this case the activation of the gift cards.
I'm not sure that that answered the question or that we even understand each other. Because obviously, if the readers, for instance, are updated from the swipe to the chip to the tap, that's updating something used in a card system, but not necessarily for their specific card system. There's a difference between what I'm trying to get at. Is there a difference between generic modifications that don't specifically impact the ability of this multifunction card to work differently than specific modifications required to make this work? I know I just got way down the hole on that. But what I'm getting at is obviously these terminals have been updated over the years, and they've been updated in ways that impact everybody that uses a card, not just these multifunction cards. Does their definition in this stipulated construction only preclude modifications that relate to the specific functionality of the multifunction cards, or is it broader modifications all over that relate to just general operation of cards in terminals.
I think it's the former.
So it's the former. It's only specialized, individualized modifications that take them out. Well, then what takes them out here? They've made allegations in their expert testimony that these things, is it just that the gist of their argument is still the reason we win here is because these are just like Visa cards and they operate in an unmodified way? Because I thought that they pointed, that's why they lost an IDT, and they pointed to specific expert testimony that they said was more here.
But the expert testimony that they used didn't apply the stipulated construction. The expert testimony was that he was trying to limit the word unmodified to either three claim functions, and then later on we were told that it was limited to four claim functions. And this was all after we filed our motion for summary judgment and after the close of expert discovery. And so the expert in this case never applied the actual construction. And in fact, in his...
So let me ask you this then. If either of your accused products do operate like this, that you can just plug them in and they don't require special individualized processing, then why aren't they infringing?
Well, they do require, I mean, that was thought, we brought forward all of this undisputed factual evidence that the cards could not be activated or sold without the modifications. And the fact
what
there were
kind
two,
of modifications?
They were specific, in order to be able to read the card, in order to be able to process it as a purchase transaction as opposed to a payment transaction, specifically with respect to these, the cards that are at issue in this case, there is a special fee that's on top of the card, and the point of sale system had
so
to recognize
take,
it. And may I finish? On?
No, I have a question. Okay. If you take your card into, I don't know what your cards do, the briefings weren't very good on the details on this stuff. If you took your card into a retail store that did not have all these modifications you talked about and tried to plug it in, it wouldn't work.
Correct. Absolutely wouldn't work. And the evidence is undisputed in that, with that perspective. They took the deposition back in 2012 in a previous one of these Alexam cases and asked the same witness back then and asked that same witness in 2021 the same questions. And she answered it the same way, which is without these modifications, the cards would not work. The cards could not be read. The cards could not be processed.
Does this derivative claim construction thing they're talking about really matter? It sounds like you, even if you agree with that, your view is the summary judgment of no infringement was correct.
Absolutely. And in fact, this derivative claim construction thing, this is not in their red brief. I mean, in the blue brief. It was only raised in their gray brief. And under this court's precedent, that's waived. So this whole derivative argument is waived. The ability to challenge the stipulated claim construction, they can't do that. That the court's precedence is clear on that. And they don't put forward any argument at all with respect to how under whatever proposed construction, and I heard a different proposed construction today than I've heard in the briefs or even below as to what unmodified means. How under whatever their new construction is that there is infringement. I mean, under the construction that the court that they stipulated to, that was adopted by this court and applied in IDT, that was adopted by this court and applied in GAP, right? That's the construction we're dealing with here. And it's very clear that at the end of the day, that modifications made for use in the card system take you outside of the claims in this case, and in fact, we have undisputed modifications. And and what they've done here in this case is exactly what they did in IDT. In IDT, you had an expert, or actually two experts, who never looked at the point of sale terminals. And in this case, you have an expert who came out and said, "I didn't look at the point of sale terminals." In fact, you don't have to actually even look at the point of sale terminals to determine whether or not they're unmodified. And what Mr. Richardson has said is now, which is also a brand new argument, that the claims either require a bin or unmodified, and not both. But that's, we claim 34 and claim 60. They require both a bank identification number and that the terminal be unmodified. Both requirements are in those claims. And so, as a result, the view from Alexam is that simply this court erred in IDT, and therefore, we don't have to follow it. All right. And this, and they've now told us that, well, that was a mistake. They didn't mean to sort of say that. But as the district court found that basically their approach to IDT is as it doesn't exist. is they essentially ignored it. And under both IDT and the Gap case, they are collaterally stopped from challenging the stipulated construction at this point. It's been used in two Federal Circuit cases, one where ultimately they're putting forward the same infringement theory that they're putting forward now, they put forward then. And then we have to talk about Gap. I mean, in Gap, this court invalidated the two asserted independent claims here, 34 and 60, and four of the dependent claims, and yet we're still here arguing about them. And their point on Gap, which is, it sort of blew my mind, but with respect to what they ultimately said about Gap in their brief, ultimately, is that they don't say anything about the Gap decision. I mean, I was looking at their gray brief, the table of authorities doesn't mention Gap at all. And that's because there's no citation to or discussion about the Gap decision in the Alexander. There's no acknowledgement regarding what this court...
Can you just describe the substance of the point you make about Gap rather than...
Sure.
Are they interested enough?
Ultimately, Gap used this same construction, the unmodified construction, the stipulated construction, to find that six of the asserted claims in this case were invalidated.
And is the distinction that your friend on the other side is trying to make today one that was at issue in that decision?
It was in the underlying case. They had actually proposed a similar claim construction in the Gap and Best Buy cases and at Markman in that case that was then rejected by the district court, that they did not appeal to the Federal Circuit. The Federal Circuit then used that claim construction to invalidate the same claims that we're talking about today, based upon specifically the unmodified aspect, that Alex Sam was unable to antedate the anticipatory SVS prior art that was in that particular case.
You said something about this argument about the for use in the card system not being in the blue brief. I take it that we've been talking pretty much the whole morning about the section of the brief in the blue brief 42 to 44. The term unmodified refers to the limited list of claimed commands. And although it's not so easy for me to parse, the opening sentence of that section specifically says we're making this argument based on the for use in the card system language. It doesn't feel new. I'm not sure what the argument is exactly, but it doesn't feel new.
Sorry, this is in Alex Sam's brief, the blue brief?
The blue brief, yeah. Page 42, in the parenthesis.
The term unmodified refers to the limited list of claim functions. This section, Your Honor?
Yes. I think that's what we've been talking about for the last
hour. But this is not the claim construction that they stipulated to. This is not the claim construction that was used in IDT. This is not the claim construction that was used in Gap.
That's a different point from I never heard of this until the gray brief. You said this argument was not made until the gray brief in this court.
Yeah.
I'm looking at blue 42. It seems to me whatever this argument is, it's invoking this language.
They didn't ask for a derivative construction below. They did not ask for a derivative construction in their blue brief, Your Honor. The first time that they mentioned the argument that they cited the case law for, which is the GE versus Lightning case, is in their gray brief. It's not in their blue brief, Your Honor. I respectfully disagree. They ultimately, before the district court, they tried to make an interpretation argument, which was they said, the stipulated construction is absolutely correct. The stipulated construction that goes all the way back to data stream is absolutely correct. But here, you know, we want to interpret the construction differently.
And we get that all of the time.
Right. But that is...
And sometimes in the application of a construction, an interpretation is made by the applier, namely the summary judgment court, that we treat sometimes as a claim construction issue.
Well, but they in their blue brief, what they asked for was a new construction. They said the district court wrongly construed the unmodified. I mean, that is the first heading in the blue brief on page 26. The district court wrongly construed the unmodified term without adequately reviewing the intrinsic evidence, which excluded preferred embodiments.
Right. That's one of their kind of process arguments, which are highly distracting. All these arguments about your side, too, about what was said previously and what was not paid attention to and what was not in the table of authorities. There's a claim construction issue in dispute. They have a position. I'm not entirely sure I understand it. You say, no, that's wrong. And so you started, I think, fairly enough with the prosecution history, a merits point. So all of this kind of, there's a lot of noise around the only issue that makes any difference, which is the claim construction position that they assert wrong?
Is the claim, yes, the claim present question, the claim construction position that they present is completely wrong. It undermines the prosecution history.
Can you tell me what the difference is between what you just told me, the claim construction of unmodified with respect to this in the use of the card system is versus what he just seemed to agree to? Because it sounded like you're both saying the same thing.
The first time I had ever heard it. So that was his specific recitation.
You both agree that with this stipulation, which is how you implement the unmodified portion, the unmodified doesn't mean any modification whatsoever. It just means specific modifications to use the specific cards.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. And in fact, we have undisputed evidence, because this expert didn't look at any of the evidence, and he ultimately said, I don't need to look at any of the evidence. But we have undisputed evidence, and it's listed in the factual section of our brief, which goes through and talks about the money spent, the amount of weeks it took to modify the software on those point-of-sale terminals in order to make them work. And so it's a question of, IDT was a question of, they didn't actually put on any evidence as to whether or not it was unmodified. Here, we have all of the evidence to show that, in fact, it was modified. And the only thing you have on the other side is an expert who has admittedly not adopted and not used the claim construction that was stipulated by the parties.
I think you said this, but so just to clarify for me, you had testimony that the card reader itself wouldn't read the card without modifying the software resident on the reader, not that it read it, sent it upstream, and the upstream system said, what the heck is this? I don't know what
correct. To do. Correct. And if, our descriptions of the facts in this case are on pages. Starting on page 26 of our red brief, all the way through 32, with respect to reading the card, with respect to understanding what was on the card, with respect to specifically this additional fee that has to be processed with respect to the cards. There's specifically on page 28. It says at the bottom, DBS will create an enhancement that will intercept the item encoded on the BHN card's MSR track 1 and pass that to the transaction register that the item is in the sale. That's a reading of the card specifically. I mean, ultimately, what was this patent about? This patent was about putting a BIN, which is a bank identification number, that's the same number that you'd have on a credit card, on a gift card, being able to swipe it at the point of sale, and it magically gets to where it's going to go. The ultimate problem with that is that a credit card is a payment card. You're using it, it's $20, let me swipe it, and the payment goes off. But this is a gift card, and you have to activate the gift card, which it turns out when you buy a gift card, it's a purchase, you're purchasing the gift card. You're not using the gift card to pay for the transaction. And so the point of sale terminal has to know that this is not a payment transaction, but that this is a purchase transaction. And how much money do you want to put on the gift card? Well, you have to program the point of sale terminal to understand that. How much additional money do you have to pay for the right to buy the card? There's a special fee when you buy a Visa branded gift card, like $3.99 or $4.99. You have to add that too. And so ultimately, the point of sale terminal has to know all that. And it has to know that it has to send this, the transaction, ultimately not over the banking network, but to the actual processor who's going to activate the gift card, which again is not a payment transaction. And so it's a completely different.
Are these cards activated once or with every transaction?
It's activated once. And then ultimately the card gets used later on like a credit card because it has a BIN number on it and it can be used to pay for things at a standard credit card terminal. But the key is, and these claims all require activation, right? This is the first transaction. And so that activation transaction, it turns out, is a very specialized transaction. And if you look on page 32 of our red brief, we even have an excerpt from the manual that Blackhawk produces for its customers for when they want to sell these cards. And it's on top of it, it says in big blue letters, point of sale application changes. The partner will create and maintain the necessary POS application changes required to support the Blackhawk Network gift card program. So the changes that the modifications that the parties have made is, you know, 100% clear in terms of and undisputed. And the only thing that they can point to is an expert who puts forward the same opinion that the IDT experts put forward, which was rejected already by this court. And, you know, Federal Circuit cases have consequences. They have to have meaning. If this court as an IDT has decided in a precedential decision that this is how you construe the unmodified construction, and this is what you need to prove it, then the district court followed that, right? They follow that, and we...
I think we need to end it. You're way over time, and we'll try to restore some of the rebuttals that you gave him about. Okay. Here from your friend.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Reserve 2 minutes.
May it please the court, good morning. Mr. Hoffman has already explained the defendant's position, or excuse me, the appellee's position on why the claim construction applied by the district court below was correct and should be affirmed on appeal, or rather, in argued, affirmed again.
Do you have anything to add?
I would like to add just a couple points, if I may. First, I wanted to clarify Your Honor's question about the scope of the products that are at issue in this case. Appellant's blue brief did say that at issue in this appeal are Simon cards and prepaid cards processed by Blackhawk. On behalf of Simon, there are additional cards at issue. Simon has cards that were provided by American Express and U.S. Bank, and Blackhawk, I understand, has cards called the PayPower cards that are not anything to do with Simon. So there were different cards at issue.
And was there different expert evidence about the requirement for altering the point of sale software or hardware so that the cards could be read? Different evidence for the different classes of cards that you just described?
Alex Sam had the same expert. Simon and Blackhawk had different infringement experts, but the fact witnesses were different for Simon and Blackhawk. For example, Blackhawk's PayPower cards had different witnesses that testified than the ones that were talking about the Simon cards. So there was different factual evidence
And you had for your non-Blackhawk cards? Kind of evidence?
I would say it's the same kind of evidence about all the many modifications. The Simon witness was the same, but then there were witnesses from U.S. Bank and American Express who were also deposed as well. So the evidence was different. Those witnesses had nothing to do with Blackhawk. And I would just like to make 2 points, if I may, about GAAP, which we sort of started to talk about but didn't get very far down the road. As Mr. Hoffman mentioned, to all of the asserted independent claims and many of the dependent claims were invalidated in GAAP. And I will say that Alex Sam, in its briefing here, does not dispute that the other dependent claims materially alter the question of invalidity at all. If you look at the gray brief at page 32, it only says the claims were not a part of GAAP. And for the claims that were in GAAP, Alex Sam has never claimed that they didn't have a full and fair opportunity to litigate those claims. They just claimed that they were able to, that those claims disappeared as a result of something they did in the court below. So I'm happy to answer any other specific questions, Simon. Thank you.
I'm sure. Thank you. We'll restore 6 minutes of rebuttal if you need it.
Thank you very much, Your Honor. There are a number of issues that I'd like to unpack. One of the ones that I'd like to respond to is Judge Toronto and Judge Hughes in particular, who raised issues with respect to understanding what our position really was on claim construction and on this concept of generic versus unique changes. fundamentally, the issue is that not all changes to the POS device, that is, not any changes, are disqualifying changes. We know that, and I'd like to just point this out very briefly from columns.
Everybody agrees.
Well, columns four and columns...
Interface, whatever that means exactly. I thought it was agreed. You can make interface changes.
That's not even... The non-infringement arguments are very complex and would be reviewed here for the first time with a new construction. And the issue is that some of the points...
construction. You both just got up there and said that you agree to the same thing.
We agree to the same language. We don't agree that it means the same thing. They say that for use in the card system means, for example, having to configure the POS device for use. Well, that's not for use in the 608 card system. That's to use the device. So for use in the card system must mean the claimed functions of the 608 patent, which are sending and receiving information to the processing hub, and swiping and scanning. That is entry of this.
The phrase, the card system, which is a reference to something antecedent.
Yes.
What is it a reference to?
It is with reference to the 608 patented card system. That is this card system. That is the only way it makes sense. And the reason is that these are the claims of this patent that circumscribe this invention.
There was discussion toward the end of Mr. Hoffman's argument about these claims being about activation. Is the process of activating one of these cards a use in the card system?
The process of activating is a use of the card system. However, the POS device, for it to be unmodified, what we look to because of pages 3469 to 3470, which is the remarks, and column 4 and 5 of the patent itself, what we're looking to are we sending something off of the POS device, the standard POS device, and are we sending it somewhere it's not supposed to go? Are we sending it off the network? That was the only concern, and that is the only reason that unmodified was added. We can see that from the language of page 3470. The software allows you, the custom software, allows you to process the Stimson card on the Stimson processor and never go and bypass the banking network. That was the only reason that unmodified was added. And it's really important for you to understand.
Wait, are you now saying that unmodified mean all you meant by that was that it? I don't even understand this argument. This sounds like another new argument to me. Off the system, why would you need to use unmodified to say off the system?
Because, Your Honor, the unmodified device was on the system.
But as we spent a lot of time talking about with you and with your friend, I thought unmodified meant that you didn't have to make specific changes to the POS device to use your card. Nothing on that has anything to do with it, whether it's on the system or off the system. It's whether you have to make individualized modifications to use the specific card system.
With respect.
And yours you don't, and theirs they say they do.
I think we're very close, but we're arguing about an issue that is really super critical, which is,
If you're trying to say off the system is now somewhere in this claim construction, you're really too late.
Your Honor, I'm not saying anything. I'm merely quoting what the inventor said, one, but I'm talking about the impact on for use in the card system
Where did you ever argue that in the card system meant it excluded off the system stuff?
Well, Your Honor, on several occasions, one of them we were criticized for using saying that the construction excluded closed systems. That's off the network. That argument, perhaps you'll recall, involved the Stimson disclosure at the bottom of columns
one
and
the
top of column two.
Let me ask you this: if we reject this off the system stuff,
yeah,
and the construction is, as you stipulated to, we read in the card system to mean the modifications that are excluded are ones that are individualized to be able to use a specific card product. And their representations that in order, at least for the activation, maybe the use of it after activation doesn't require modifications, but the use or the activation requires modifications, then their card doesn't infringe, does it?
Your Honor, it does. And we're just missing each other, which is that it's the claimed functions that have to be unmodified. So if you have to modify...
Is activation not one of your claim functions?
Your Honor, if you're required...
That's a yes or no. Is activation one of your functions?
Not as the question stated, no. Because the reason is that the...
Why? Is there no activation in any of these claims?
The reason is that there are some modifications, perhaps, some software, Your Honor, that allows you, that you're required to do, to perform for all cards. So it's not for use in the card system. It is merely to use the POS device. And I'm sorry if I've added confusion to this. I certainly didn't mean to. But the key takeaway here is that the phrase for use in the card system refers directly to the claimed functions, and that it's modifications to those claimed functions that would be unique to the card and not generic to all cards that would be disqualified. Because if they are generic to all cards, they are not for use in the card system. They're merely for use in the system. And that reads out the import of this. May I briefly comment on GAAP if the court is interested?
Just a couple sentences, please.
The matter isn't properly before the court. It wasn't a matter of it wasn't cross appealed. So under Federal Circuit Rule 3, it's not here.
How did they cross appeal? They won.
Well, they're seeking to expand their rights below, Your Honor, and they're seeking to expand their rights by they have a judgment of non-infringement, but they're seeking to expand their rights to include a finding of invalidity. And my understanding of the notes to Federal Circuit Rule 3 is that they were required to cross-appeal. There's also substantive defects in their arguments, if Your Honor is inclined to discuss them.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Sides and the case is submitted.